Okay, good evening. I've been debating back and forth for the last day or so what exactly the best way to do this is. So we might change gears a little bit in the middle, but we'll see what happens. The first thing is just a few practical things. First of all, if you have any technologically advanced phone, an iPhone, BlackBerry one doesn't really do anything, but an Android or an iPhone, you should have the CRC app on your phone. It used to be that you had to call the rabbi when you're in the store to ask all the questions. All I'm going to do is look at the CRC list or look at the Star K list or the OU list. So I'm happy to do that for you, but you could do it yourself if you can't get through to me. The CRC app has it. You can print out the CRC, Chicago Rabbinical Council, Passover Guide. It's about, 50 pages or so. It's good to have around. There are just a few pages. CRC kosher or something like that. The OU has an app also for Pesach. CRC kosher, you got it? Okay, so that has a lot on it. There are within the CRC guide, there are four very important pages. It's called the CRC Pesach Shopping Guide. It looks like this. It's literally just four pages, and it lists off items and whether they need to have a regular hashkacha. The regular hashkacha is enough, or whether it needs a special Pesach hashkacha. And again, it's not only whether it's a CRC certified item or not. So these four pages are also very important to have. I keep these with me all the time when it's during the Pesach season. You should have these four pages as well. It's within the entire guide. I'm not sure if it's on the app separately together, but the app also has a lot of other great information. The Star K also has a Passover directory. I don't think they have an app yet. Maybe they'll work on it soon. The Chaf K has an app. And the CRC app, actually, I think, was just updated today with the newest Pesach information. And the OU says they're updating it soon. I didn't check to see if it was actually completed or not. So you want the 2013 update, which, again, I think just came in the last day or so. So you really want all that. If you have all that handy, then you don't need the rabbi so much. You can still call. I'm happy to be involved. But I used to feel like I should designate, you know, 2 or 3 hours to sit in ShopRite and 2 or 3 hours in Glad Express, and it would just save a lot of the time. But again, you can accomplish a lot of the basic information in terms of what needs a hechsher and what needs a special Pesach hechsher just based on those. Anything the CRC, Star K, or OU says, you can assume is reliable. Okay, you get the different other organizations, you're not as clear necessarily, but those three organizations and the Chaf K as well. Those four organizations, CRC, Chaf K, Star K, and OU, any four of those, whatever they say, is they are reliable. There may be slight differences in certain things, but you're in good hands if you're following what they're saying. Okay, so this morning when I was waiting for Vice President Biden to start speaking, I scribbled down a few notes of the PAPAC conference, which was absolutely fabulous. I recommend everybody should go. The three premises that I think we need to understand, and from that we'll try to maybe build everything that we'll talk about. The first premise is that we know that the Torah requires us, in terms of Pesach preparation, not just that we're not allowed to eat chametz, but we're not allowed to possess chametz, we're not allowed to own chametz, and we're not allowed to see chametz that belongs to us. There's no problem going into a store that has chametz that they're selling inside the store, assuming that, well, if it's owned by a Jew, it's a different problem, it's not your problem, but there's no problem seeing somebody else's chametz. You're not allowed to see your own chametz. So any chametz that you have, you can't eat, you can't benefit from, you can't see, and you can't possess. So that's premise number one, that's a given. A second premise is that the Torah requires, this is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Rambam as well, that everybody enjoy Yom Tov. There is a mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov, and it applies to men, women, and children. And the third premise is that the Torah was given to human beings, the Torah was not given to Malachi Hashareis. And therefore, the Torah does not ask us to do anything that is impossible. Everything that the Torah asks us to do, we are capable of doing. The problem comes now is putting all three of these things together. How do we properly get rid of all of the chametz from our homes? and at the same time be able to enjoy Yom Tov. Right? That seems to be the problem that most people, as they're getting close to Yom Tov, are grappling with, is in terms of cleaning, in terms of preparing the house for Pesach, before we even get to cooking issues, how is it going to be possible to not enter Yom Tov as a stressed, agonized, exhausted human being and be able to actually experience what Pesach is all about? But again, given our third premise that the Torah doesn't give us anything that's impossible, it has to be that it is true. So why is it so complicated nowadays? Sorry for my back. Why is it so complicated? What has changed? There are a few things that have changed. It used to be in the olden days that the people who had the very large homes had many servants in their very large homes to clean their large homes, so that come Pesach time, the people who had the large homes would have a cleaning crew that was in their house and would be able to do every single Pesach preparation in terms of cleaning their house on their behalf. And the regular people had one or two rooms, and they would clean their one or two rooms. Now, what's developed is that the regular people now have bigger homes, and they don't have the cleaning crew built in. And now we're trying to do everything that we remember, and then that's development number one. And the second development is that we have higher quality items and different quality items, and we don't necessarily have to scrub in order to be able to remove things, because we have laminated furniture, we have laminated cabinets, and we have better quality items. So we're trying to do everything that was done generations ago on a lot more of our homes. And that's one of the reasons that Pesach cleaning becomes very, very daunting. So I want to just try and go through the basics. What are we required to clean in the house? What is necessary and what is extra? And again, I'm not knocking anybody's minhagim. If you want to do more, you can certainly do more. But realize that doing more on the cheshbon, on the calculation, or at the risk of losing out on Simchas Yom Tov is not a simple matter. Because if you're going to walk into Yom Tov exhausted and not prepared for the experience of what Yom Tov is about, so then if you were doing things that were extra, maybe it's not worth doing the things that are extra, and maybe just do what we're absolutely, basically required to do, and come into Yom Tov with a real appreciation of what it means to be a Ben Chorin as opposed to being an Eved. So what do we need to do? So there are a few rules that will govern our cleaning, and hopefully if we understand those rules and we try to apply them, maybe we'll go through the rules and then try to go through the home and try to see that Pesach cleaning really should just take a few hours. Okay, here we go. The halacha is that you only need to clean for Pesach places where chametz has been brought during the year. If you have a place where chametz has not been brought during the year, you do not have to check that place at all for chametz. So if you don't bring chametz into the bathroom, your bathroom is now clean for Pesach. Perfect, you're done. One room is finished. If you don't bring chametz into your garage is finished. If you don't put chametz on top of your bookshelves, the tops of your bookshelves have now been prepared for Pesach. The other applications you can think of, crawl spaces, whatever it is, if it's a place, if you do not bring chametz behind your oven is now clean for Pesach, right? And now there is an exception, which we'll talk about shortly, is that if you have little children, it's a totally different story. We'll get there. I'm in that parsha, so I understand. But again, just on a very basic level, if you have places that you know there was no chametz, you are not obligated to look for chametz. The second thing is that if you're assuming that, and I think we all try to get rid of our chametz in three ways. We do a search for chametz, which is followed by a destruction. We do a biur chametz. We do bitul chametz, right? We nullify the chametz. We get up, we declare, this chametz is considered to me, it's probably worth doing it in English if you don't understand Aramaic, and it's more important the intent, that this chametz to me is like the dust of the earth. It's totally meaningless. I have no ownership over it. I don't want to have any ownership over it. And the truth is, technically, min HaTorah, that might have been enough. And it was only the Rabbanan required extra because, you know, as much as you may mean it at the time that you say it, when somebody comes along in your house and sees that nice donut which is sitting on the counter because you didn't have to clean it up because you said, I don't own that donut, it could present some problems. So Chazal said, again, it's machlokas nishon, but basically the way it's understood is that Chazal said you also need to get rid of the chametz. But we also do a third mechanism, which is that we sell chametz. We do mechiras chametz. Once we're doing mechiras chametz, then any chametz that you're not going to be seeing on Pesach that's put away, something that's going to be put away, does not have to be cleaned. You can just take the item, put it away, because you're selling the chametz that's on it anyway. So if you have your toaster oven, you can take your toaster oven, and again, depending on, in my house, we usually bring things up from the basement, and the Pesach things up from the basement, send the chametz things down to the basement many, many, many times. So if that's where you would keep the things, put it in the garage, wherever you're going to put it, you can simply take your toaster, put your toaster away, and you're selling whatever chametz is inside of it. You're not going to sing it, you're not going to access it over Yom Tov, and your toaster is clean for Pesach. Because you don't need to do anything else. If there's anywhere else you're not going to be going into, if there's a closet that you're not going to be going into, you simply close the closet, put a sign, put tape on it, something that everybody should know that this is where the chametz is located, and you don't need to clean inside of the closet. So again, that takes care of all the small appliances, that the chametz appliances that you have lying around on the kitchen counter, the island, wherever it may be, that you're not going to use on Pesach. You don't need to clean, you don't need to scrub, you don't need to do anything with that stuff. Simply put it in a box, put it away, and you are done with all of those things. They are ready for Pesach. The next rule is that anything which is not edible, cannot be eaten by a dog, is not fit to be consumed, is not considered to be chametz. You don't have to do anything to it. So if you have your deodorant or your shampoo or any of these other items, they are not chametz. When it comes to certain things, we'll talk about it, I don't know, later, next time, something. There are certain things that have liquid perfumes and maybe certain types of spray deodorant that have certain types of alcohol in it, where there are opinions, or Moshe Feinstein very famously said that anything which is liquid and has, I think, ethyl alcohol in it, since you could distill and get that alcohol out of it, and then it's a chametz-based alcohol, so you have to be concerned, even though right now it's not fit to be eaten. But anything which is solid, you can't simply distill. You can't take your deodorant bar or a bar of soap or anything like that and distill it and try to get the alcohol out of it. It's a solid, it's not edible, you don't need to do anything with it in order for it to get ready for Pesach. Similarly, if you have food that's been sprayed, hold off on that for now. Fine, that's number three. And then the fourth is that what are we really looking for? We're basically looking for things that are still edible to human beings. It has to be something that's the size of, about the size of a kazayis. Everybody keeps throwing around 30 grams. I have no idea how big 30 grams is. Let's assume that a kazayis means the size of an olive. Seems reasonable, right? We'll take it the size of an olive. So we're looking for chametz that's the size, about the size of an olive. If you find chametz and it's in an edible form, which is smaller, you should certainly be getting rid of that as well. But our main mission in the search and destroying, when we go through the house in terms of chametz, is looking for chametz that is the size of a kazayis. If you have chametz which is larger, if you have chametz which is less than the size of a kazayis, or around the size of a kazayis, which is not fit for human consumption, even if it's fit for a dog to eat it, you don't have to be concerned about that either. Which means that anything that you have any sort of a Cheerio, let's assume it's a little smaller than a kazayis, if you have a Cheerio which has been sprayed with Windex, Lysol, any of those cleaning products, it is not fit for human consumption anymore. If you find a Cheerio behind your oven, it's probably not fit for human consumption anymore, or shouldn't be eaten by a human being, so you don't have to be worried about any of those things. If you take those basic rules and cut out what we'll call for now spring cleaning, there's not so much that has to get done. Let's take a bedroom. So again, if you don't ever bring food into your bedroom, then your bedroom was already clean for Pesach. Let's assume people like to snack. So occasionally you may bring a snack into the bedroom, or we'll take the little kid example, and there's cornflakes everywhere in your house. So you have a bedroom. So what are you looking for in the bedroom? You can vacuum the carpet. That's not so hard to do, and that will get rid of things. You don't have to move dressers. You don't have to look behind dressers. You don't eat behind your dresser. The chametz isn't going to get behind the dresser. You can move the beds a little bit, but chances are, under the, you know, at the centermost or the furthest point where you could reach from the outside, a child isn't getting chametz under the bed over there. If you are concerned that inside the drawers somebody's put chametz, you can quickly look around. You don't need to take up every article of clothing and see what fits and see what's from the spring and see what you need for the summer and the fall and figure out what you need to go buy. That's not Pesach cleaning. That's something else. We'll call it like a spring cleaning. That's not getting ready for Pesach. So how long does it really take in a bedroom to quickly look on the surfaces and under the bed a little bit, and to maybe, if you really are concerned that there's something inside the drawer, to push around a little bit some of the clothing and look for pieces of chametz that are the size of an olive? It doesn't take very long. How long will it take to clean a bedroom to get ready for Pesach? 5 minutes? Maybe 10 minutes? That's it. Dusting is not part of Pesach cleaning. Outside the kitchen for now. The kitchen's going to be separate. Let's talk about the kitchen. The kitchen is a little bit different. But the outside of the kitchen for now, dusting is not part of it, because the chametz which is dust does not concern us. That's the chametz which we say should be like the dust of the earth. That's what we say when we're being mevata, when we're nullifying the chametz. That's not what we're talking about when we're trying to do the real Pesach cleaning. So you don't need to take all the clothes out of the drawers, wipe them out, put a lining in, whatever else people do, put the clothes back in. That's not Pesach cleaning. So that took care of that takes care of the bedrooms. Children's bedrooms are also, yes, it may be a convenient time to figure out what fits and what kind of new clothes. But if because of that you're going to be more tired for the Seder, it's not a good idea. Maybe the week after Pesach is a good idea. Everything is clean already, so you can start again. But even if you're concerned, so the children, you know, after Shalach Manos, usually there's a stash somewhere in the children's bedroom. They think you don't know. But of course, you know, they're putting away a little bit that they managed to scrounge up over Purim, and it's in their room. So first of all, unless it's talking about a cookie, most candy isn't really chametz. Most candy is kidneys, maybe some sort of chametz. I'm not saying you should eat, I wouldn't eat it on Pesach, but it's not anything that you really need to be very concerned about. But even if we're going to look, so you take a child's bedroom, so maybe they have some sort of cubby where they put their junk in, so that you need to look through a little bit. But in terms of the bottoms of their closets, you can maybe look through. You can look in their pockets if you want a little bit, if you're afraid that they put a cookie in their pockets. But to take out every item of clothing and unfold it and refold it and wipe out the drawers, that's not Pesach preparations. That's spring cleaning. That's getting ready for the next season. That's not getting ready for Pesach. You can quickly give a quick look under their bed, and that's going to be enough to make sure that, again, we're looking for the pieces that are bigger and still fit for human consumption. If there are places you can't get to, you always keep around that bottle of whatever it's called, the Clorox. What's the spray stuff called? Fantastic, right? That's what it's called, Fantastic. You take the bottle of Fantastic and you spray it on anything, and you don't have to worry about that thing anymore, because it's not, unless it's bigger than a kazayas. If it's bigger than a kazayas, then you have to be concerned that it has to be something that a dog can't eat. I haven't experimented on dogs and Fantastic. It's probably not very healthy for a dog either, but they'll probably still eat it. So again, how long does it really take now to clean most of the house for Pesach? Not very long. Is everybody okay so far? This is good news, no? Okay. The floors as well. We're not looking in the cracks and the cracks and the crevices. If you're worried about the cracks and the crevices, so walk over with your bottle of Fantastic and spritz it. You don't need to go with a toothpick and start combing out whatever crumbs and whatever else may exist in the cracks in the floor and elsewhere. We're really looking for real chametz. That's what the Torah had in mind. The Torah wasn't trying to get us to get our. If you think about the houses of old with the floors that they had and the dirt floors and everything else, you think it was really possible for everything to be, you know, shining, beautiful, and spick and span for Pesach? They did the best they could. I saw somebody write, there was a collection, I think it was from Rav Sternbach, Zichron Levacha, before he passed away. They put away, I think he was very bothered by this, the fact that that women were not enjoying Yom Tov and not giving over the experience to their children and to their families of what Yom Tov is supposed to be, because they were so harried and stressed with the Yom Tov preparations. And he put together, I think through his Talmidim, certain chuvos about, again, about these issues in terms of what are you really looking for, what's bonus and what's required. I think he points out, I think the person who wrote it, I guess, on his behalf, you know, said cobwebs and curtains are not chametz. And that was really where he started from, because all the other dust that we like and may want to get rid of is very nice to get rid of, but it's not chametz. And if it's going to mess up Yom Tov, it's not a good idea. So that's basically getting rid of the car is somewhere which definitely needs to be cleaned well. That does is something which is time consuming. But again, the cracks in the car and the floor that you can't really get to, but somehow food manages to get to. The best thing to do with that is our good old bottle of Fantastic. You spritz it inside, it can't be eaten anymore. If you can take the super powered vacuum at the car wash and suck it out, you know, that's great. But if not, then you don't have to worry about it. And also, if you can't get to the chametz, you don't have to worry about anybody eating the chametz. The concern when we're talking about bittul, why shouldn't bittul work, is because somebody may eat it. When we nullify the chametz, we're afraid somebody may eat it. If you can't get it out when you're trying to get it out, to get rid of it, nobody's getting it out to eat it either. When you get rid of your car, somebody else is going to have to deal with it. But that piece of those pretzels or whatever else manages to get in those slots where the seats connect to, back into the car in those vans, it's there forever. I don't think anybody can get them out. So you really don't have to. You don't have to be concerned. You don't have to be concerned with that either. Okay. So there again. So in a few hours, I think the whole house is basically clean for Pesach, except for the kitchen. Right? This could all be done in a Sunday morning. You get a few. If you get, you know, you bring in the family and have a few other people participate, then this really is not very much that needs to get done. Again, we follow the same basic rules, which is that, first of all, we're only looking for chametz, and we're only going to be looking, our concentration is on chametz that's around the size of an olive. If it's smaller than that, we'll try to get rid of it, but if it's smaller than that, and it's not fit for human consumption, even if a dog could eat it again, as long as it's been sprayed, then there's absolutely nothing to worry about. We're not even searching for that. If it's bigger than that and it's not fit even for canine consumption, we're not concerned with that. If it's something which is not going to be used or accessed on Pesach, you don't have to do anything. You just have to seal up the cabinet. There's no reason to take out everything from your kitchen cabinet that you're selling and that you're not going to be entering into on Pesach to clean them out. You're selling it anyway. Just put a piece of tape on it, or put a sign on it that says chametz, and that is done. If you have a brake front or something else where you have chametz, kalim, and utensils that you're not going to be using, just close up the whole brake front, or you cover up the two shelves, and that is it. You don't have to worry about those things. Yes.
So let's say you do a piece that's bigger than the center of that today. Under your bed, and you never saw it the whole
Pesach,
and you
didn't
know it was there. Are you actually over anything?
No, because
bittul
works.
Even if it's bigger than under your bed.
Bittul works on everything. Bittul works on everything. As long as you've nullified your chametz, and certainly if you sold your chametz, there is no way that you can actually violate the Isser D'oraisa of owning chametz, other than going out on Pesach and purchasing chametz. But short of that, there is no way they are going to do it. So the Rabbanan said, you have to try. You have to search and you have to try to find whatever you can. If you do find something which is chametz on Pesach, so there's a slight difference between whether you find it on Pesach, whether you find it on the Yom Tov days versus Chol Hamoed. On the Yom Tov days, it's muktzah because it's set aside. You're not allowed to be doing anything with it. So then the halakha is that you just cover it over. You put something on top of it, a bowl, whatever it is. If you want to use a Pesach bowl, I guess don't touch it with anything. Everybody's going to get very, very angry if you do that. You put it on top and just cover it over, and then you burn it on Chol HaMoed. You make a little bonfire, and if you find it on Chol HaMoed, then you can just get rid of it right away. Again, bittul really works. If you, assuming that you mean it, if you really mean it, it works. The Rabbanan said that you have to continue to look for the chametz also, and then once we do the mechira also, which allows us again. What we use the mechira for is the chametz that we're keeping. We know about it. But the closet that you want to, the few boxes of cereal, whatever it is that you don't want to waste, a few bottles of scotch, if that's the reason that you're not selling it, it's the products that you know are chametz and you know exactly where they are. That's why we're selling it, because bittul and technically works for that, but it doesn't. Those are the kinds of cases where the Rabbanan were concerned. Because if somebody would happen into your scotch cabinet and they were interested in drinking that, it would appeal to them. So again, since it's going to be something which is fit for eating, that's why we have the mechira. But once you have the mechira and you can just seal up that room, you're in very good shape. So you don't have to be overly, you don't have to check everything four times being concerned that if I don't find it and it might be there, then I'm going to end up violating something in the end. Okay, the kitchen is a little bit more complicated. A, because there are chametz things that we want to use on Pesach, like the sink, the oven, things like that that we're going to have to deal with. The other complication, and the only other reason to be more careful, and I don't think it's necessarily considered to be what we'll call the spring cleaning, to be extra meticulous in the kitchen, is because one of the other aspects of chametz, which is significant, is that the laws of bittul, of nullification, which normally apply. If you have a pot of chicken soup and somebody comes along and a little bit of their coffee with milk spills in your chicken soup, it's bittul b'shishim. As long as there's 60 times the amount of the chicken soup versus the milk, so you are allowed to eat that soup. Nothing wrong with it. It's considered to be kosher. You're not allowed to do it l'chatzchila. You're not allowed to do it intentionally. But once it's happened, you are allowed to eat that soup. Chametz is different. And chametz is not batel. So if a little bit of chametz, even again, the most minuscule amount, what the Gemara calls a mashehu, even a little bit falls into your Pesach food, that Pesach food is now considered to be chametz. So that's the reason why it's not crazy to be extra careful in the kitchen, because if you do have small crumbs which are edible and they would somehow end up in your food, so that would be a problem. I don't think you need to go totally overboard, but if somebody wanted to dust in the kitchen, it wouldn't bother me. I don't think that's beyond the pale or beyond what's reasonable in terms of just Pesach preparation. Because again, in the kitchen, you want to be extra sure that's where all the food is going to be prepared. You want to make sure that there's not going to be anything which is chametz which could get into your food. So again, in terms of the cabinets, so if you're going to have, again, if you have cabinets that chametz dishes into it, you're going to be taking them out and putting Pesach things into it. So you don't need to clean the dishes that you're putting away. You don't need to make sure that there's no chametz on it, because that was the rule we said before, that as long as you're putting it away, it doesn't matter how dirty it is, because it's going to be sealed, it's going to be out of view, and you're selling your chametz. So the chametz dishes can just be taken out right away. There, it makes sense to wipe out the cabinet. You want to, some people additionally put something down, you can do that. I don't think that's necessary. Once you've already scrubbed it out, I'm not sure where else anything is going to get into your plates from, if you've really scrubbed it out. But if you want to line the cabinet, that's fine as well. But there, again, it makes sense, because your Pesach dishes are going to be going there. So that's in terms of, and if you have any cabinets where, let's say there you have your flour and things like that in one cabinet in your kitchen, you're going to be taking all that out, and your matzah meal and all those other things are going to be in that same cabinet, certainly that needs to be cleaned out very, very well. You need to get rid of everything in and maybe even line it. Yes?
What about the cabinets that you're closing out?
You don't have to, just tape and that's it. You don't have to look inside of them. They're ready for Pesach now as soon as you put the sign that says chametz on it. Again, unless you're not selling chametz. If you're selling your chametz, then that's exactly, that's part of the sale. It's important to realize also, first of all, that when you're selling chametz and you have possibly chametz on your dishes, you're not selling your dishes. You're selling the chametz on your dishes. It's important, because if you sell your dishes and you buy them back, you've got to go take them all to the mikveh to tovel them. Because whenever you buy a kli from a guy, you have to tovel that kli in the mikveh. So unless you want to take all of your dishes back to the mikveh, do not sell your dishes. You're selling the chametz on your dishes. Yes?
When you're selling chametz, do you have to specify what you're selling?
No. Well, in a general sense, you do. But you don't have to specify. Again, most people put away their plates clean. Right?
I think. You have to specify something, a certain cabinet or a certain room.
Yeah. The chametz form usually says in it, where is the chametz. It doesn't have to be every single detail, but in terms of the basic areas, if you have, you know, one closet here and a few cabinets there, if everything's marked off, so that's really good enough also. As long as the guy would be able to come into the house and see which cabinets belong to him and what he can take from it, and, you know, pay you back and pay you for it after Yom Tov, then that's totally fine. But again, the cabinets that you're selling for Pesach that you're putting away are ready for Pesach now. As soon as you put that sign on it, seal it up, masking tape, whatever it is that you do in order to make sure that nobody is going to enter into it. The refrigerator also. So the refrigerator is a place where it's certainly possible that little pieces of chametz are found in the refrigerator. So the refrigerator should also be cleaned out very well. Now, whether it has to be lined or not is not 100% clear. If you never put, again, in order for taste to be transferred in halacha, it requires at least the medium of heat and possibly also a liquid medium to go along with it. So the only way that your shelves in your refrigerator have actually absorbed chametz beyond the physical chametz that you can see would be if you normally would take your hot soups and things like that and put them into the refrigerator when they're very hot and something may have also spilled out of it. But if you're very careful, again, I think it's not good for the refrigerator to put in very hot items. It throws the temperature off. So if you are careful not to put very hot items into it, then you really, other than the actual physical chametz, not the absorbed chametz, the physical chametz which you could either see or wipe clean, you don't really have to worry about lining it. Again, if people are more comfortable lining it, it's fine. They say that you should poke holes in the linings. It has to do with the air circulating. I don't fully understand how that works because the shelves are glass also, but whatever. I'll take everybody's words for that. I don't want to mess up anybody's refrigerator. So if you line it, put holes in it. And again, that will certainly take care of it. And there also, you're going to wash it out for the for chametz. And even if there are tiny bits left, chances are you also use one of these spray things when you're cleaning it. So the spray thing, which combined with a really good scrubbing, you have absolutely nothing to worry about in terms of what anything physical chametz which is left there. And then in terms of what's being absorbed, if you never put anything hot in the refrigerator, you also don't really have to worry. And if you want to be careful, you can put down some sort of lining. You may want to check, even though this does sound a little bit more in the spring cleaning phase, sometimes there is chametz which sneaks into the gasket. That's the I don't know what it's called. The thing, when you push the refrigerator closed, like the, it's not foam, the rubber thing which seals it, and it sort of wraps over itself a little bit. It's like more like an accordion. So sometimes, again, especially if you have your freezer, a freezer above or below, and sometimes things from your, if you're taking a piece of cake out of the freezer or cookies, things like that, crumbs can end up inside of the gasket. So there also, it's probably, again, I don't think you have to sit there, you know, with a microscope checking the gasket, but it's worth giving the gasket a scrub out and also spraying it. And when you're sprayed, together with your scrubbing, we'll make sure that there's nothing problematic which is left in your gasket. That takes care of your refrigerator. What else do we have in the kitchen? So we have the ovens. So again, the basic rule when it comes to koshering normally is that you need to wait 24 hours before koshering anything. The truth of the matter is that you don't really need to wait 24 hours before, this is the only exception, before self-cleaning your oven. If you're going to be kashering your oven in any other way, then you would still need to wait the 24 hours. But the self-cleaning basically is what we call Liban Gomer, which is a full burning. And the idea behind it is basically it takes any molecules of chametz that may have been absorbed and also was on the surface, and the temperature gets so high that it actually burns it, and we assume that it's totally destroyed. When something's been totally destroyed, then the 24-hour issue isn't as much of an issue. So if you have a self-cleaning oven, the self-cleaning is certainly the easiest way to kosher your oven for Pesach. If you leave your grates, then your grates are now kosher for Pesach also. If you want your grates to be able to be pulled in and out afterwards, it's not so wise to leave them inside.
A little oil,
there you go. Or just you pull a little hard, that's what we do. It works just fine. Right, you could do that. You could do that.
Is it considered done?
I think so. I would clean the door first with something, whether Easy Off or something. Not the, you know, you don't.
Don't put Easy Off on.
No.
No, never.
Really?
Why not?
It says on it. It says Easy Off for self clean oven. I have not else. Okay, I don't know.
If you grill over the door first?
If you do something. I would try to physically remove from the door, clean the door first, but I think the door does get almost as hot as everything else, and generally, your food doesn't really touch the door. And the food that you're going to eat. The spill, not the food that you eat. If you would take the grates out, then you would put the grates back in and turn your oven up to the highest temperature that it goes, which is whatever, 550, and leave it in for about an hour, which is the alternative. There you would have to wait 24 hours. The grates would not have been able to have been hot for 24 hours, which is that same method is the alternative method if you don't have a self-clean oven of how you would kosher the oven, which is called the Liban Kal. It's a lower level of burning it, where you put it at the highest temperature where it is used. And it works as well, but there you do need to have the 24 hours before you have to let it sit for 24 hours of not being used before doing it. So, yeah. In which one?
If it's
not self-cleaning, about an hour on the highest setting.
Now the highest temperature, of course, is the broil. You let it go to 500. What does it broil?
How hot the broil? Broil's hotter? I think. Where's the... What did they say? See, there's these trusty guides when you need them. They're good for this stuff also. They suggest... Also, its highest temperature. So I don't know, I guess you got to figure out if the broil. Yeah, the real idea is the highest temperature that you would use it at for a prolonged period of time. And I don't know how long you feel broil things for an hour. You don't broil things for an hour, right? Right. So I think I think the setting below the broil would probably be fine. Also, I'm not sure. I guess we could try to figure out if there's a major difference in temperature. But again, around the highest setting for about an hour, and then that will. But there, the oven needs to be cleaned first. If you're doing this, the non-self cleaning needs to be cleaned, and then sit 24 hours, and then you can do it at that point.
Is the self cleaning, you just self clean it and then you can start?
Yeah. Yeah.
No waiting.
Again, some say you should wait 24 hours. I haven't figured out why. So again, if you want to wait 24 hours, you can. What?
Before.
Okay. I don't think you have to wait 24 hours even before. Okay. Let's go to the top of the stovetop. So Well, let's talk first if you have gas, you have some sort of actual flame. So in a certain sense, the Greeks always kasher themselves. Right? Does anybody have separate Greeks from Milchiks and Fleshiks? I've never heard of such a thing. I don't think you need it. I'm just curious. Because the reason, but I'll explain to you why don't you have it. Right, because the fire burns it. That's basically, it's constantly koshering itself. But for Pesach, again, we're extra careful when it comes to everything for Pesach, so we want to sort of up it a little bit. So if you have the regular fire grates, then what you should do is put the fire on to a fairly large fire. Put a clean blech on it. It could be your Pesach blech. Put a clean blech on top of it. It's probably better not to do all of them at the same time because the heat will be too intense. But maybe do two at a time, and that will kosher the grates and possibly even the area in between. Probably the area in between as well. It's still worthwhile to cover the areas in between the foil, between the fires.
How long do you do
that? 10 to 15 minutes. 10 to 15 minutes. I'm sorry?
Barbed wire?
A barbed wire.
You separate.
On top of the grate?
On top of your pavement.
Yeah? I don't know. Okay. Yeah, I guess if that's what your custom is, I don't know. If you have some of them have this, I think it's like called a continuous grates, then you don't really have to be so concerned. You can line under it with foil. It's probably better to line it with foil under it, but you're not, the food.
You mean the floor of the sofa?
If you take off the grates,
yeah.
Right, they call the drip pans, right? That's what they call them, drip pans. You can put in the drip pans, but also in between. If you're going to be putting pots down in between, there's space between the fires normally, right?
Yeah.
Am I crazy?
I don't know. What if you have a continuous grate?
If you have the continuous grate, then as long as you kosher all of it, so then you're fine. But you still might want. It's still worthwhile to befoil around the. If it's not a big deal, if it's a big deal and you clean that, then you'd have to just clean the bottom because there may be food and stuff down there. But you can clean the bottom. Let's start again. Take off your grates and just clean out the bottom because there may be food, there may be other things that are there.
After that's hot. I mean, what if
it's hot when?
It's hot too. Consume.
Right.
So what happens if you're cooking pizza food and it's not covered and pizza food's still burning?
I wouldn't eat that food.
Right. Then it's just safer to just cover it.
But you wouldn't eat that food if it was covered all either.
No. Why?
The food that
the
falls
food
under.
Is clean.
Like under like where the fire is. Okay, so then if you're going to eat that, then I would cover that. I would only eat that which lands on the foil. If what stainless steel?
So,
in between, yeah, you could do that. I just thought that was, I just didn't think that, yeah. Boiling water will work for the stainless steel which doesn't touch the fire. Yes. That's better.
But
yeah. Oh, those things. Yeah, I'll probably kosher that. Yeah, I'll probably kosher that. Yeah, the same thing. About 10 minutes with something on top of it. It could technically be a pot or something on top also. You just need something to spread the heat. Yeah, if you put the blech on top, then the assumption is that the areas in between the grates will get hot also, and that will probably kosher it. But if you really wanted to do it, then yeah, Hagolah would be fine. But I wouldn't have thought of pouring hot water on top of the stovetop. Like a solid sheet of metal, right? Am I putting that on top? That allows the heat to spread. It could be a pot, but I would put something in the pot. Just because it's not good for the pot. It's not good for the pot. But it would be a clean pot to do the same thing. An electric stove? So an electric, a glass one or not glass now? I think an electric, you could do the same thing. So you can't put the
clothes. Right.
Yeah.
I have
a
electric coil. Right. So should I use a pot or a hundred pot? With water, in order to get the electric coil very hot.
In the equivalent of the bluff, you don't use a bluff. You can't use a bluff.
Well, you could use a bluff. You take
You could use a. I wrote this down because I get confused every year. I think as long as it is a clean bluff, let's double check. 1 second. I wrote it down because I always get confused. It could be a clean blech, it could be a clean chametz stick blech, it's fine. If it's, you only have a dirty chametz stick blech, then use your Pesach blech.
But it has to be...
Or a clean pot.
In order to kasher. It has to leave it on the whole
yard. Oh yeah, correct. Yeah, for sure. I'm just talking about how to spread the heat. Just how to spread the heat. 10 or 15 minutes, so it seems like the heat has been spreading.
You don't have to actually cover the grates, right?
On top of the grate? No. No. I said differently after?
No.
What? Oh. The grate?
After you kasher
it. No, after you kasher you don't have to cover the grate. Unless it's ceramic. Oh, sorry. If the grates are ceramic, ceramic can't be kashered. I don't know. Somebody came to me Friday night with a ceramic-coated frying pan. I never heard of such a thing. I don't know what it is, but it's very... hard to kosher. So if there could be a ceramic coated frying pan, there could probably be ceramic grates. If there aren't, then don't worry about it. I don't know. But okay. The problem is the glass top stoves. Anybody have one? I was gonna say we'll skip it. Yeah, what? I thought you can't do that. Okay, great, that works. Somebody told me that was going to ruin it. He covers it with tinfoil. Okay. I thought it gets too hot. The easiest thing is to do hagala and to pour boiling hot water on it, combining that with some sort of heat. Again, Ashkenazim normally don't kasher glass for Pesach, but given the situation and you need to get the stove kashered, so there's lots to rely on with that combined with covering it as much as possible. That's the glass stove top.
If you're glass under, because you use them one area after the other, you're not getting rid of the glass. Can you use a pot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could use a clean chametz pot. Clean chametz pot. Okay. Let's go to the counters. So if you have a stone, granite, marble, or stainless steel counters, you can kasher the counter by Hagalah. Again, the basic process of Hagalah is you have to have a pot of boiling water, and it has to have the big bubbles. Malav Abuos is what the halacha says. The little bubbles that are at the beginning when you throw the pasta in, that's not the kind of bubbles. You need the really big bubbles. You need a big fire with big bubbles. It takes a while. It's not quick. And you need that and you got to do it right away because once the bubbles die down, again, and the halacha obviously realizes that the second you turn up the fire, the bubbles go away. They weren't Chazal knew what they were talking about, but it has to be done. It has to be done immediately. And you have to go over the counters. And the counters can't just get wet. The counters have to get wet with the water that's coming from directly from the pot, not what spreads afterwards. Yeah. Because that water's cooled down already. So it needs to be, it has to be hitting with it might take a few pots of water in order to get and a lot of towels, whoever's coming behind it. But you really need to be very careful. I know people that have had very serious burns from doing this. But again, if you can always just cover the counters, and that's totally fine. If you have a backsplash, which is the same material, which can be kosher, you should kosher that as well. If not, you should probably best to cover the backsplash. If it's wary that the pots may something may have spritzed onto it and may
and
very good. The fantastic will take care of business, any of the real chametz there. Again, if you wouldn't never, if your chametz food would fall, would, if your, you know, your knedel would pop out of the pot and hit the backsplash and you wouldn't eat it, then you're okay. But if you would eat it because your backsplash was clean because you did the fantastic, then it should be covered or koshered, because it might have happened that at some point a noodle flew out of a pot, the same way, you know, when you're pouring the noodles from the pot into the colander or into something else, so a hot noodle may have hit the backsplash. It probably didn't hit the top of the wall right where it met the cabinet, but in terms of the backsplash, it's probably worthwhile to, again, if it's something which is kosherable, like stainless steel or stone, granite, marble, something like that. Again, there are many opinions that say you can kosher formica as well if there aren't, if it's not worn out where there are a lot of cracks in it. But you should kosher it before, if you're going to be eating, if you would think of eating the food that would touch it, then you should kosher it.
What about vent?
Like on the bottom of the oven? I think you just clean.
No, over the oven. The hood.
Oh, on top there? You should try, I think, just to clean it out as best as possible. I don't think, it's very hard to pour water up. So, I don't know, I'm not sure. No, you can't cover it. It's not, but I think you just clean.
What?
Is it in danger? I mean, isn't the vent there to prevent the heat from getting too hot?
It's it circulates the air and gets steam out.
Is it bad for the appliance if it doesn't go out, or the house, or if it's hot? I guess if you see that it's dirty, the thing, again, if it's not actually dirty, so then what are you really worried about? The steam going up and bringing it back down? Steam doesn't really do that, unless it's very, very tightly closed. A tightly closed pot may do that. Inside of a it's hard to imagine that that's going to happen with the, you know, the underneath from the microwave, whatever the heat is.
First of all, you keep the water in the kettle.
So I think a kettle does make the big bubbles. If you peek inside, it usually is very big bubbles. An instant hot does not get big bubbles. You can, the whistling is good. I mean, the louder whistle. At the beginning, you know, as the whistle gets louder and louder, when the whistle gets to the louder point, that's usually when it's big bubbles. Those kumkums bubble, the kumkums bubble, the instant hot, like the ones on the sink, the instant hots do not get that hot. Now there are those, everybody, the biggest thing, I don't know, it was last year or 2 years ago, everybody's asking about steam. Steam can kosher, but everybody's talking about different, the metzias, so the actual physical, what are we talking about when it comes to the steam? I think people are very unclear on. First of all, we're not talking about your iron from the you know, the clothing iron. It's possible that that could work. You'd have to, I think, do. Again, I'm not recommending it because I don't know if it's dangerous. But you'd have to put water on the counter and then put the iron on top of it and wait for it to bubble. Again, you need to have boiling water. The question is whether the steam is another form of boiling water, so the steam will be good enough. So, yeah? So there's two.
The counters,
made for the counters?
Well, it's a commercial, it's a big tank.
Right, like the ones that they use for the wallpaper? There are different kinds of steamers. There are the steamers that people have. Some people have steamers for their clothing, like to try to get rid of the wrinkles. Those are definitely not hot enough to get rid of this. The professional steamers, like the kosher agencies use, are the same steamers that are used to take off wallpaper. Kind of that's how the companies get off wallpaper. As you steam it, and then I guess it melts the glue or something, and then it comes down. Those steamers do get hot enough, but it's not a magic trick. You can't just, you know, take it and wave it like a magic wand over the counter. You need to leave it over each spot on the counter long enough that the initial steam formed water on the counter, and then the steam that followed it caused that steam to bubble. When it comes out, it's not boiling hot. I spoke to a few people at the OU. Well, you can burn yourself before getting to the point of the big bubbles. If you pour 200 degree water on yourself, you're going to burn yourself. But that's not the same as the big bubbles in the pot. When I spoke to a few people at the OU, because everybody kept asking about this, and this is what they told me, and this is what they said, that the mistake people make is that they assume that you can just sort of just run it over the counter and that's good enough. They said you need to make sure that whatever water is on the counter is boiling. And they said that generally the slow but only way to ensure that you're doing that is that if you initially hold it over, it's going to you're not going to want to stick your hand there, but you'll see that it's wet. And then if you go on top of it, you'll, when that water then gets heated up, that will kosher. But it might not save you time. It might save a mess. And hopefully, maybe, I guess, theoretically, a burn. But it's not, I'm not convinced that it's an easier process.
It's much less water. It leaves water on the counter, but not like when you pour a pot.
Right, no, Matt, it's definitely less mess. Definitely, but if you have a good towel person behind you, I don't know, my parents' house, I was a towel person. That was my job. you have to have a good towel person. Yeah, the towel boy.
You have to get every single spot directly from the pot. First of all, almost impossible. Second, when you're rooting out, flood your kitchen.
Yeah, you gotta do the best you can, obviously. You're not gonna. But again, you're walking along as it's pouring, and you have somebody by the front of the towels and put the towels on the floor and by the top of the cabinet. I cover my counters. I don't do this. But if you want to do it, this is how it's done. The same goes for the sink. We didn't do the sink space. Assuming you have a stainless steel sink, so the same Hagala process goes for the sink as well. You need to, first of all, not use the sink for anything hot for 24 hours. That's the age-old Hagala. The same thing with the countertops. You can't put anything hot in your countertops for 24 hours before you're kashering your countertops. But the sink is...
When you say you put anything hot on the countertop, it has to be directly like your chowing pot. Then you put the bottom of legs. It's not on. Is that considered on or no?
Does it get hot under? I don't know.
Yeah.
It should not get hot under when you're going to...
I don't know, when you can touch it, when you pull it out, you can touch it after. It's not hot. It's not on.
For hot, we're talking about 120 or so degrees, 115, 120 degrees would be hot enough that we wouldn't want that to be that hot. It isn't so hot enough that you feel hot to the touch.
So if it feels hot to the touch, then
you shouldn't do that in 24 hours beforehand. If you put a trivet down, then there, the heat probably wouldn't go through the trivet. I don't know, would it?
No.
Not a, right. So that would be fine.
And the faucet.
And the faucet also, the sink should not be used for 24 hours before koshering. Again, there also you got to go slowly. Pour it on the faucet. Sometimes you can turn the faucet over. But most of the faucets that pull out, you can sort of turn so the part where the water comes out is up, and it's easier to kosher than trying to pour up.
What about the spray? Like that plastic spray?
So koshering plastic is a little bit of a question. Many posts assume that you can kosher plastics. Then it just matter how dirty, assuming that there's no little pieces like the screens and things like that you can't clean. Like the drain things we generally replace. We assume that that anything, the Shulchan Aruch paskens, that anything with holes, small holes like a sieve, then we're nervous that it's very hard to clean out inside all those holes from previous chametz. We don't kosher things with little holes. So the things that gather the gunk, the drain gunk holders, and you get another one at Home Depot for $5. They're not particularly. So again, if the sprayer doesn't really get dirty, then you probably could use a sprayer. Just pour the hot water on top. Again, as long as it's a hard, if it's metal, then it's for sure it's okay. If it's a hard plastic, then again, many folks can assume you can kosher the hard plastic as well. Is there anything else left in the kitchen? What did I forget?
Microwave.
Yeah, I forgot microwaves. Might have been on purpose. Okay. The microwave. Yeah, the problem with the microwaves are plastic, which again is one of the places where the folks can generally seem to be coming around more to assuming that you can kosher the microwaves. The way to kosher the microwave is to put a glass of water inside it. Yeah. Also, sorry. All these things except that I didn't review, but that's what I said at the beginning. Everything except for a self-cleaning oven needs to sit idle for 24 hours.
The gas stove top.
It would be preferable. It would be preferable not to use that for 24 hours also. Again, it could be that that's more similar to the self-cleaning if you were stuck. But if you could wait 24 hours, it's better to wait 24 hours.
My homemade glass cup?
I guess it could be ceramic. Yeah, that's like every. I just assume, I don't know. It should be a clean. It could be a clean chametz stick mug that hasn't been used. That hasn't been used. It can. It won't. It won't explode. Yeah. No, you do. You have to need more than 5 minutes.
What?
It probably needs more than 5 minutes. You need the. Yeah.
I crash all the time. My microwave.
5 minutes, is it, and you get the big boils, the big bubbles. Okay, great. Okay. What's big bubbles? You need to have the big bubbles which are producing the steam. That's basically we're assuming that the steam. You need the steam. How long does that take? Let's go here. I mean, the more the better, just because they'll produce more steam. You want to make sure the steam is covering. Rabbi Przanski writes, it should be cleaned well, and a glass filled with water should boil for 15 to 30 minutes in the microwave. So I don't know. It's however long it takes. Microwaves are also different strength. It needs to be that the big bubbles are exploding all over. Now you do need to be careful. It's supposedly true that under certain circumstances, water that's heated in a microwave, when then moved, can out of nowhere explode and just. Right. So afterwards, you have to be very careful when moving it. I think the odds of it happening were something like close to getting hit by lightning. But it's still, if you can avoid it, you should be very careful. So again, so you heat it until it covered. If you can cover the plate, again, the plate is usually glass, and glass we generally don't kosher. So. The best thing to do is to either take the plate out or to cover the plate. If you put a piece of cardboard on the plate and cover that with saran wrap, that seems to work fine in my past experiences.
Why not just cardboard?
I don't know. We always did cardboard. I guess you could do saran wrap. So my mother did. I don't know.
Have
a paper towel each time you do it. And I guess it's okay. The paper towel just doesn't move. Okay, so cover the paper towel. It should be covered. It should be. It preferably be covered. What you should do also, the best thing to do is to do a second cup of boiling water. If you do a second cup of boiling water and put it in a different spot than the water was in the first time, so then as a backup, your glass plate has been koshered. Now Ashkenazim, sorry. Yeah, because the cup doesn't move. The cup's in the same spot even when it's rotating, right? What do you mean?
Underneath
the cup wasn't kosher. So again, Ashkenaz, Sephardim kosher glass for Pesach. So there are opinions out there. So again, as a backup, it may be worthwhile to do a second cup of boiling water, and then you still cover it. But now, if things slipped and didn't remain covered, you at least had the backup in place. In that, there are opinions that would say that it wouldn't have been a problem anyway.
The Ashkenazim, even in old times, didn't kosher glass?
Yeah, the Ramah writes that Ashkenazim don't kosher glass. So, is it 1700s? That's when that's things that weren't used with hot. Things that were used for chametz and not used for hot, so that I don't know, they put in the bath, that they do miloy v'iroy. You fill it up and you 24 hours.
My grandma, I think,
you need to do it over for 72 hours. The rabbi even stuck it in here somewhere. I don't remember where it is. It's somewhere here. I think generally, Baruch Hashem, we're at the point where we can just buy another glass. We don't do this. But that's only good for things that were used for cold chametz, not things that were used for hot chametz. But if your glasses went to the dishwasher, then even that wouldn't help. Exactly, that's why they did it. We don't have to do it, and we generally don't kosher glass. Can't what? It's a machlokas how we treat the glass. So we're machmer, especially when it comes to Pesach. Glass tabletop. And you put, does hot things generally go on the tabletop? Again, I think generally speaking, the minhag seems to be in general that we cover our regular tabletop. So again, if you wanted to first put the hagala on it, again, you don't lose. But it's probably better just to cover the tabletops. Okay.
Yeah, did you say that the glasses on the plate has to be covered with ceramic?
It's better to cover it with something. It'll make your food slightly uneven, but you'll be okay for a week. Won't cause any. Yeah, right. Not even using it on Yom Tov. It's just Chol Hamoed. Okay, are we good for today?
Did you get the dishwasher?
Yeah. Okay. If your dishwasher is not stainless steel, there's really not much to talk about. If your dishwasher is stainless steel, including the racks, and there are no little cracks and things like that where food can get absorbed, then it seems to, and you clean out the, make sure that the drain thing, and you might have to unscrew it, and then theoretically you could kosher. I think the recommendation is to do 3 cycles, and do soap in the first cycle, and you don't necessarily need the soap in the other cycle. The soap would then be po game. It would, do the same as my bottle of fantastic. Woo, that's the first. If you just flip that switch up, it will go back on. It will serve the same function as the fantastic. And then the assumption is that if the water was hot enough to really cause a problem, because the water was boiling, then doing it enough times should get it back out. So if you're not, don't have stainless steel, but a lot of times even the stainless steel ones, they have the plastic parts on them, and it's also Chol Hamoed. It's 3 days. I mean, Yom Tov. Have your husband do the dishes. Tell your husband I said he should do the dishes on Yom Tov. I just enhanced your Yom Tov. Yeah, that's what we do. That's what we do. Yeah, anything which is sealed up. We took the... So we tape it because otherwise one of the children usually comes along and turns it on. I don't know. We stick something under so you can't push it, so it doesn't fully lock, and we close it and hope nobody's going to turn it on. But you can, definitely use it. You can use anything to store, again, as long as you're closing it up. Again, those are the basic rules. Hopefully made it a little bit easier. And, I don't know. We'll talk about maybe more Pesach actual questions as opposed to getting ready for Pesach. If anybody wants to, 2 weeks from today, next Monday night, I'm not around. Maybe 2 weeks to talk about maybe, Pesach cooking and other exciting things. Maybe we'll exchange recipes.